men can drop frame or they can be vulnerable, but they can only be vulnerable with men. And that's why we have a history of all these institutions where men do that. And then they elect the best, and the best standards, habits, and interests eventually rule as part of that institution. And all the men are happy to do that. They're happy to follow a great man. Military is the same thing, right? And that is a stable way that men properly interact. But men doing that with women is unstable because of hypergamy. And that's the story of all modern relationships. And that's why everything's an utter mess.
You're listening to the Wake Up Podcast with Alex Fetsky, the place where the most dynamic thinkers and practitioners in the world drop truth bombs and contrarian viewpoints to help you become the best version of yourself. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. I have my man, Travis Stewart, joining me again for part three of our, I guess, meta-series where we dig into masculinity and what it means. This one's entitled Frame, Dignity, Responsibility. And as you can probably assume, they're the things we discussed in this. We also discussed things like literal versus metaphorical Christianity. I think this is a thorny topic. Also, we challenged, I guess, I believe I recorded this before I wrote that ego death article. So we went and had that discussion about, you know, is ego death some spiritual fucking horseshit, which I largely believe that it is. And what is the pursuit? Is it the pursuit of killing your ego, or is there a pursuit of forging a strong, powerful, grounded masculine ego? So it was that. We discussed a whole lot of things. So as usual, Travis is one of my favorite guests, and this is one of the best episodes that we've recorded. So I hope you enjoy the show. I'll see you next week. Ladies and gentlemen, episode 90, Frame, Dignity, Responsibility. I've got Travis back with me. Dude, thank you for joining.
Yo, no problem, my man. How you doing?
Good, man. Good. I've had a crazy couple of weeks just moving around, moving house, changing place, and now just trying to settle back in for the next month before... Let's see what the next chapter brings.
You were in Colombia before, right?
Oh, Jesus, man. That was about 8 months ago now. So we were in Austin last time we spoke. Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. First time Colombia, then Austin. Where are you now?
Back in Austin for a little bit. And then the plan, I don't know. We'll see what's next. It's kind of like visas are a little bit tricky at the moment. So we'll see.
Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah. So look, I wanted to bring you on. I wanted to have a chat about a couple of things. Like the three keywords that I listed were frame, dignity, responsibility. And kind of where this popped for me was I was having, I'm in a bunch of these Telegram groups, and one of them in particular is called Thoughtful Bitcoin Dialogues. And it's a great group. It's got a bunch of guys who are sort of Bitcoin philosophy sort of bent in there. But what I found was that there's a heavy tendency to get all pro right brain, basically pro openness, pro philosophy, like excessively, Eastern and mysticky. And I guess there's no other way to really describe it as almost like a lack of frame. And I don't want to paint and strawman, anyone with a brush here, but I don't know. I just felt frustrated seeing this because, there's another one of my recent pet peeves, this whole thing about ego death. And I think that is the most fucking ridiculous thing on the planet, right? Like ego represents, the conscious construct of one's identity. And as if you want to fucking kill that, you want to fucking forge that into something. Mm. And for me, like ego lives in the masculine realm. And, we've got this whole movement towards ego death and ego this, ego that. It's like, it's kind of, all of it is a renunciation of responsibility, of frame and of dignity and all this sort of stuff. So anyway, that's a bit of a preamble. I don't know if there's anywhere you'd like to pick up on this. Maybe we define these.
Can you try to give me a bit more of an example? I think I know what you're talking about, like the way that people are speaking, but can you give me an example of that? Maybe something you came across, the way people are speaking. And are you referring specifically to a tendency within what seems like a very masculine community, the Bitcoiners, and also having that, like, it seems like a disconnect. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Or it's at least, it's at least segments of the community. Cause I would argue that a lot of the Bitcoin community is actually, still trying to catch up to the masculine space, or at least the frame space. So for me, I find, or I draw a lot of interest at the intersection of like philosophy, theology, Bitcoin, economics, and masculine frame, like somewhere in the middle of that. And I think this is where, you know, people like you and I really relate, is that there's something interesting that, there's a common thread between all of those. And for me, the word that seems to be common amongst all of those is this idea of responsibility.
Yeah.
But what triggered this was I had Nozomi Hayase. I don't know if you're familiar with her. She's like a, she's a psychologist.
I think you mentioned this last time. Yeah.
Yeah. She's a psychologist. She's cool. She's awesome. You know, she wrote this piece called The Networked Messiah recently. And the whole premise of that she made this claim that civilization has, gone way too far on the left brain type of thinking, so empirical focused thinking, and as a result we've built all these static institutions and we've imposed order and we've lost access to the free feminine side of existence. So we've lost touch with our innate intuition, intelligent instinct, and all of this. Now there is some truth in that, right? Because, you know, to a large degree, the institutions have stultified, but I pushed back on that. And I said, well, it's not just that clear cut. We haven't just moved to the complete left side. We've also moved to the complete fucking retarded right side, where we live in complete moral relativism. Frame has been decimated. There's no more responsibility. Everything is relative. Everything is fluid. Everything, everyone is fucking so open that their brains have fallen out. So I kind of push back on this notion. And I just, in that group, like, so I'm kind of looking for something like, Thomas Strohlite sort of sent a couple messages saying that, so I posted a couple quotes from Joe, for example, and I'm just going to read one out here. Tomer, I love you, but I'm just going to read one. I don't know if this is even going to reinforce my point or not. I'm just picking a quote. It says, thanks. I don't myself go for these man take charge guides, far too generalized and dehumanizing of women. As a man reflecting on my life, my left brain has been too in charge of my life for far too much of my life. I've learned to surrender to the right. And that doesn't mean shutting down the left, just having it let go of its need to dominate. As such, I've discovered that there's much more inside me than just a smart, rational, hardworking man. There's also a sensitive, creative, loving, tender, universe-worshipping soul. I mean, that sounds like a fucking woman to me. So again, Tomer, I love you. I know you're going to listen to this, but for fuck's sake, you sound like a woman. I think there's a, you know, the something about that rubs me the wrong way. So again, not to point at people here. This isn't a thing to like take people down. But I think there's a discussion to be had here about the primacy for a man to live in the rational left brain, so-called left brain side of existence.
I think where I'm struggling is I don't think of all of this in terms of left brain, brain, right brain. So it's hard for me to, it's almost like a different language. Mm-hmm. I think of everything in terms of instincts and sort of instincts run amok and then instincts corralled. And I believe that the masculine is more responsible for corralling instincts, where the feminine, they run amok. It requires the masculine to, in order to corral them, right? Women will all, like, when you talk to women openly about this stuff, they fully admit it, right? But what I find strange is that what you just described there was, oh, I'm this, you know, this pent up, you know, guy putting on, what is it? Like, I'm guarded and I'm blah, blah, blah. And I just need to let myself out in my soul. And it's very feminine and it's like, all these instincts inside, sensitivity, vulnerability. I don't understand any of that stuff because I don't have any of it. And I think that comes from when a man has adopted ways of corralling his instincts that he's done through guilt a lot of his life. And a lot of that time is through the feminine frame, guilting and shaming a man about his instincts, which are fine, right? Which ones that aren't proving to be particularly dangerous. I'm just referring to someone's life. It's hard to explain this, but, and then I think the reaction is they go the other way entirely. And now it's like this huge self-expression thing. But truth is, man, you just got to get fucking angry. Like these are, you know what I mean? Like the human masculine instincts that have been so corralled in the modern West for men. The problem is, and that's why guys go super spiritual and kill your ego. You just weren't allowed to get angry. You just weren't allowed to like let it out. You weren't allowed to just like, you know, and then, and when it did come out, it came out in weird ways. You were pent up and it was embarrassing and you were ashamed of yourself. Do you know what I mean? Like it's such a clusterfuck. It's so hard to describe and unpack it and fix it. The problem is that men are guilted about their base behavior when it does come out because they've been bottling it up so long. It comes out in embarrassing ways that get shamed further by the woman. See, I was right. You should be guilty about your behavior. And then it just turns into like this, this next layer of total confusion about what the man's doing. At least that's the way I take it. But I think a man, when he's, I think there's a reason why no one cared about this shit for the last 2000 years, because men were allowed to be men from when they were born. They were allowed to go fight when they were kids, rough house, rough play, let all their emotions out. They were allowed to get angry. They went to work. They were allowed to work and be away from the kids without being guilted about that, because that's a very important piece. Like all these things, right? They were allowed to do that. So they were just fucking men, and they weren't like suddenly this Eastern, like spiritual, my soul and vulnerability. That's all the pent up, mal-expressed man, in my opinion, right? And we're generalizing here. We're going off a little thing said, but this is the thing I see all the time. Like that's my take on it. As soon as men are allowed to unabashedly be themselves, none of this stuff is even moderately interesting. What's interesting is living your life.
Yep.
Like with a shit-eating grin on your face. Like that's how men are supposed to be, right? Like you got one right now. Like that's how it's supposed to be. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So I guess to maybe build up a little bit of a position around this. So the word frame gets tossed around a lot. And I know we've discussed it in prior episodes. And I think you've got one of the best, I guess, you know, it's a little hard to define, but for lack of a better term, I think you have one of the better definitions of what this word means. And I think a lot of people misunderstand it. They think it's something you have to just put on and you're wearing this thing. And to a degree, like a man must hold it, right? It's a wall that they must bear. But it's not in any way, it's not fake as some people think. And there was a comment later on in the discussion that we had where, you know, that meme of that kid who's like in school and he's like, his veins are popping out of his face, like he's holding on. It's like, you know, and someone was like, you know, Alex trying to maintain frame. And I was like, well, sure, you know.
Right.
You know, that is.
It shouldn't be a struggle like that. No.
Yeah. Like that is not frame. That's like desperation. And frame and desperation are two different things. So maybe we can define that first and start there and talk about why that's actually important. And then maybe relate that back to why that is fucking necessary for women to exist in a state of like freedom, bliss, etc., because they fucking can't if we're not holding the frame.
Yeah. So I think the best, like Jer's book's great on explaining the abstract nature of frame, which is really important. Mine is a pure practical model. It's just trying to explain what is happening, right? So the two things that hear about my frame, I won't be able to define it here. You kind of need to see a picture of it, but the biggest one is that frame is, when it comes to a male frame, it is our conscious effort to corral certain mal-expressed instincts, right? That's the first thing. So, and I call that standards, right? So part of our frame is male standards. And if we were left to our own instincts, right? Like imagine we were feral and we didn't have the benefit of cultural knowledge passed down to us. And we were just like humans living for the first few times. We would be very ugly. We'd be thieving. We'd be murderous. Like we'd be all these things, right? We'd be violent. And you need to, like, that there's the, that is in the very ancient nature of what humans are capable of. They're capable of human sacrifice. They're capable of a lot of weird shit, right? So you need to corral those instincts. And those instincts come from maladapted environments, which we covered in the first two, right? We talked about the meta. Like, mm-hmm. we enter very maladapted environments. And you need to corral how those instincts are malexpressing. They're almost like diabetes. It's like diabetes of the mind, right? Mm-hmm. And you need to corral those instincts into standards. So that's the big first piece about doing that. And actually, when you start consciously thinking about that, you understand it's a really worthwhile process. Now you can think it gets into something like Eastern philosophy and, you know, losing the ego, but it's not that at all. And I'll get into that in a minute. And I'll just explain the next thing, the next practical application of how I describe frame is that your frame. So you have your standards, and then the three other parts to it are your interests, your habits, and then your assertiveness. And what you have to understand is that your frame is in conflict with other people's frames. And I think that's the most powerful piece. And people don't realize that, you know, if you're going for, you're going to go eat out at a restaurant with friends, and one wants to eat Mexican and one wants to eat Italian, that's a clash of interests between frames, and one will win. And then you have to think about, well, why does one win? Why does that guy win? Is he more assertive, right? Do you respect him more? Maybe he's a millionaire and you just naturally, you abdicate to status. Like, you, once you start realizing that frames are in conflict, you realize, well, why do I lose? That's the biggest thing that men have the first revelation. Like, okay, why am I constantly never doing my interests? Why am I always abdicating it? Good example. You're in a relationship and the wife always wants to watch rom-coms, romantic comedies. And you're just like, okay, hon. Or you're like, oh, I want to watch an action flick. And she's like, no, I can't stand those. Let's watch this one. And you're like, okay. Like, why do you do that? Why do you abdicate there? And then the idea is that when you abdicate, they crack your frame, essentially. They're cracking your interests. And then if that happens long enough, you become under the authority of their frame, which, you know, I see a lot of married guys are like that. They can't do any of their own interests. They're fully under the frame of their partner. And then the same thing applies to habits. So it's a simple thing. Let's say you are super fit guy, single, you meet a woman and she's a vegan. She doesn't really have good eating habits, even though vegans think they do. Maybe she's messy and she's just a bit of a mess, right? She is the feminine instinct of chaos, just sort of run amok, and there's nothing tethering it. So then you get in a relationship with her and she is more assertive than you are. And she will use weapons of assertiveness like guilting and shaming. And then before you know it, you have abdicated all your habits and you're a vegan now. You're a mess now. And you're just this, like, do you know, you've abdicated all these habits and now you're under her authority. That's probably the strongest one. Rollo has a great saying about that. He says, your habits or her habits are your future. So if you don't have a frame and you don't know how to protect against those frame conflicts, her habits are your future. And I see that with so many guys. So when I think about even that quote you shared at the beginning from Tomer, it's this problem. Guys have lost frame conflicts everywhere. They're in charge of nothing in their household. They're in charge of nothing in their workplace. Their habits are someone else's. Their interests are someone else's. Their standards are someone else's. Or worse, there are no standards and you're just under the frame of female instinct, which is chaotic, right? You're just under the frame of guilt and shame. That's just the worst feeling. Everything about me is wrong. I'm toxically masculine. Everything about me is bad. I'm just going to be, I'm abdicating everything. You're in charge. I'm fully guilty. So that's my frame model. Those two pieces that you have your own elements to your frame, particularly the standards one is important. And then that you lose conflicts and you lose expressing that and asserting that in your reality. When what makes a human being happy, particularly a man, maybe it's the nature of testosterone, it's the nature of biology, is asserting our frame and having it accepted. That's what makes us really fucking happy, like really happy in life. And no more like 97% of men in modern relationships do not control the frame and they're miserable.
Fucking so well put, man. Honestly, like seriously, that I think.
Hence, we need to go deep into our soul and figure ourselves out, right? Mm-hmm. No, you just got to get fucking angry and assert your frame. Mm-hmm. And to do that, we can get into doing that is very difficult, which I'm sure we'll cover, because the weapon that men are very uniquely weak to is being guilted and shamed.
Well, let's follow this thread. Let's go there.
So that is the big thing. That is how men abdicate their frame, because using guilting and shaming exploits male honor. And we are the only mm-hmm. sex that we self-regulate our behavior, and we will feel guilty for our behavior. Women don't have that. Part of their frame is the instinct of blame shifting. The second that someone accuses them of doing wrong behavior, they blame shifted elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was this person in the past, or it was this, or you actually chose this. You were the one that picked it. You see all these all the time on Twitter. It's like a Reddit post of a woman who cheated on her husband, and he's at fault for it. Mm-hmm. Right. And then the amazing part by the end of it, she's like, he wasn't treating me well and he was neglecting me and I did this. And everyone's like, oh, you know, you go, girl, you know, you had to do what you have to do for self-care, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm, it's mm-hmm. like, no, you fucking cheated and you can't take responsibility for that. But by the end of it, she's convinced the guy, her husband, that she's cheated. And he's like, I'm so sorry, honey. I see you cheated on me and I'm to blame for it. Right. That's blame shifting. And mm-hmm. so my point is that because the feminine is always, like the major instinct they have is blame shifting, they don't act with honor. The realm of honor is a male quality of self-regulating. Mm-hmm. Like I can do bad things, and before anyone's told me I've done bad things, I will guilt myself and I will feel ashamed. I will say sorry before being prompted. You know, when was the last time you heard a woman say sorry before being prompted? Do you kind of get what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So, the realm of honor is men, and that's what they exploit. So if you can make an honorable man, you can convince him, hey, you've done something bad here. You should feel guilty. Then he goes, oh, I have? Ah, I'm really sorry. And he's pliable, and you can make him do what you want. Right?
Yeah.
And
that
process of guilting can be as simple as just saying something, you did something wrong, even if it doesn't make sense. Like you can argue it a bit, but then if two people agree, you go, okay, I guess I did something wrong. I don't really understand. I guess I stayed at work too long. I feel guilty now. What do you want me to do now? Now you've mm-hmm. got all these things to get back. You have to repent, right? And before you know it, your interests are gone. Your habits are gone. Your standards don't rule and you're no longer assertive. Mm-hmm. And that's the main thing, guilting and shaming. And that the biggest version we see of that is the shaming of toxic masculinity. So the very nature of masculine behavior is shameful, and that we need to feel guilty. So men are the most pliable they've ever been. And then you see something like, you know, the videos of like Tate going on, right? And he's unabashedly not guilty, doesn't feel one iota of shame. And every man's like, oh, I wish I could do that. Like, oh, what is this thing I'm witnessing, right? And that's what's happening, because it calls to most modern men feel like there's something very wrong. I mean, this would be an unconscious thing with how much guilt and shame they feel on a daily basis for no fucking reason at all.
Mm-hmm. Just because they're fucking guys born with a dick.
We're all rapists. We're all just like animalistic. We're full of rage, right? Like, you go over the narratives of the last 10 years, and that's what it's always implying, when that's utterly ridiculous.
Yeah. I think what you mentioned there about honor is a very interesting one. It's, it reminds me of a couple things, and we've probably spoken about this in the past about Bushido and like the code of morality or the code of honor.
Yeah.
Well, the moral code, sorry, is more accurately put, of the Japanese samurai. And who were the samurai? They were the men. They were the warrior class. And the highest of virtues were things like honor, duty, responsibility. And they all seem to thread from this concept of responsibility. And as you sort of just said, the feminine instinct is to abdicate responsibility, because you can't simultaneously be free and responsible. And as I was sort of thinking about this stuff, you know, the symbiosis of man and woman, in a sense, is masculine responsibility with feminine freedom, right? It's like those two coming together, you sort of have existence somewhere in the center of those two. And that's like chaos and order, you know, another analogy of that. And, you know, to a large degree, if you're a man abdicating responsibility, what you're doing is you're, you know, abdicating responsibility, worldly responsibility, for example, to go and escape in the metaphysical of the creative, to worship the universal soul and whatever the fuck else you're doing, then who's picking up the frame and the responsibility in that vacuum?
Nobody.
You know, or if someone, it's your fucking wife who then starts to become right. masculine, yes. and she starts to resent you for it.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Because she's looking after a boy. And I know in, I was about to say we're talking in extremes, but maybe we're not, because I actually think that this is the real pandemic facing the world today. It's, you know, a lot of this might sound extreme, and to some people listening to this, they might even get offended and say, well, fuck, it's not that bad. You know, I just want to escape sometimes. And I think, you know, there is a time and a place for a man to, you know, go internal and, you know, kind of like, maybe let frame down in, you know, in private, but it's, you know, it's not, and I'm grappling with this. It's like,
well, the view I have on it that, so you're talking about being vulnerable, right? Which is, mm-hmm. which men are going to experience. And it's very important that men are vulnerable with other men. So this mm-hmm. is the ancient concept of fraternity, right? Mm-hmm, men, mm-hmm. men together. And see, the only reason that we have these particular types of frame conflicts, like men can have frame conflicts with each other, but because there's honor, men tend to let the Jordan Peterson talks about this all the time, the dominance hierarchy. We are, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. we are essentially voting the best of the men to actually control the frame. Let's say we are part of a plumbing company, or we're part of, you know, pipeline building bits. Like we let the smartest engineer, his frame rule, right? Because we have the burden of performance. This shit needs to work. Right. So men are very good at that process of, you know, it's the iron sharpens iron thing, or frame strengthens mm-hmm. frame. Men can abdicate their frame, but it's not the same thing that happens when they abdicate it to a woman, because women have hypergamy. And mm-hmm. when you do that to a woman, they become disgusted by you. Mm-hmm. Your male counterpart won't become, you know, your buddies or your friends you have camaraderie with. And you let one of them, their habits, let's say they're much better with health, they're much better with eating. And then you abdicate to him and let him, say you're out somewhere and you let him rule. Like mm-hmm. that will be a good process, but he won't become disgusted by you because your status dropped versus him. In fact, he might become feel better. He might feel like he's admired by the group, and he might be proud of that, and it might actually mm-hmm. build him mm-hmm. up, right? But if you abdicate that to a woman, and if you're in a relationship with them, then your status has dropped, and then hypergamy, and this is just the very, very nature of it, she'll be less attractive. It might be incremental, but you do that over 10 years and she's utterly disgusted by you. She said, what the fuck are you good for? You don't have any, I'm in charge of everything. What the fuck are you good for? Like that will be their attitude, because a drop of status is the most unattractive thing to a woman. It's more unattractive to a woman than cheating on them. It is the most unattractive thing that you could do, that they will actually leave you for, like overnight, and move on rapidly. So that's why, I can't remember where we exactly started with that, but that's why, men can drop frame, or they can be vulnerable, but they can only be vulnerable with men. And that's why we have a history of all these institutions where men do that. And then they elect the best, and the best standards, habits, and interests eventually rule as part of that institution. And all the men are happy to do that. They're happy to follow a great man. Military is the same thing, right? And that is a stable way that men properly interact. But men doing that with women is unstable, because of hypergamy. And that's the story of all modern relationships. And that's why everything's an utter mess.
Mm-hmm. As you were talking about that, it made me think of a couple things. Number one is how men naturally form these hierarchies, these dominance hierarchies, and the feminine instinct is to sort of equalize it all. It's like everyone needs a fair shot. Everyone should be, you know, given a chance. And it doesn't matter if they're not competent enough for this role. The fact that they exist means that they should do it. And when people sort of talk about how the world is under the, has come under the oppression of the patriarchy or the oppression of the left-sided brain, for example, which is the, you know, the part of the brain that manifests order. I actually see the opposite. Like, we've got people in roles, whether it's, you know, military roles, whether it's engineering roles, whether it's banking roles, that have zero fucking level of competence, but they're there because of their skin color, their gender, their political leaning, yeah, or whatever, right? So we've kind of lost complete touch with these functional dominance hierarchies, and we're just doing things out of some misplaced sense of equity or equality. And I think about that, and that is, you know, it is very feminine. This is why women, or, you know, the feminine isn't the energy that rules, because everything goes to fucking shit when it does. And recently I've been doing some, like, a real history binge. And in particular, the last thing that I just finished was Living Through the French Revolution. And I don't know if you've done any reading on the French Revolution, but all of these ideas, I mean, the first feminists were French philosophers, dudes. Yeah. They were the first ones who came up with these ideas of, like, mass equality. They were the first ones to abolish the patriarchy, literally with the killing of the king, like the political and the father of the nation. They chopped that down in place for the mother nation, like, and they, yeah, transformed what was a patriarchy, a monarchy, into a republic. But you look at the ideas that came out of the French Revolution. They abolished the father's primacy in the home. They introduced divorce and made it standard across the board. They removed the father's right to basically the inheritance laws under the monarchy, where the eldest son inherits everything, and the girls don't inherit anything. And, you know, maybe some of the younger brothers, for example, might inherit a portion, but it was the eldest son who primarily inherited. And they abolished all of that. They flipped it all fucking upside down, and they made it all equal. And what came out of it was, you know, siblings were then forever left in conflict. You had everyone entering politics all of a sudden. Women were called upon by their, men were called upon by their women at home. So that the politics of the time was, women, go and convince your men that fighting for the Republic is what you must do. So they basically, they emasculated men from that time. And it's crazy to, like, go back and read that. And all of it stemmed from these ridiculous ideas, like mass equality, mass suffrage, yeah, like equal suffrage, you know, the everyone gets a fucking vote, these feminist ideas, these equality ideas. And it's, and I mean, France was the greatest kingdom in history at that point and the richest country in the world. And look at it now. It's a fucking disaster. They don't know how to heat their fucking homes anymore.
Yeah. I know. There's this is the way I look at it. There's a bone to pick that women have that's ancient, that's from the beginning of time. And that's the bone of less than. I always think of this stuff in terms of psychology. I really think of things in terms of the unconscious mind. I know you do left brain, right brain, mm-hmm, but I really think in terms of instincts and those instincts that reside in the unconscious mind, where we don't really are aware of what we're doing. Like, we're almost strangers to ourselves and how we, mm-hmm, act. Right. So there is, I've tried to figure it out. It's just been something I've really thought about over the last, I would say, 15 years. It's like, why does socialism, feminism, why do these things persist almost in all timelines? And it's because of this what I call this concept of less than. That means, like, you feel, it's like there's, so we're hierarchical, right? And you feel less than in the hierarchy. And it does something psychological to people that they can't enjoy their life at all. It doesn't matter what riches you have. It doesn't matter how, if you have a nice iPhone and, you know, like, you get a nice place to sleep and you're taken care of and you go to your family camp, you're still miserable. Like, I'm thinking of some, like, spoiled university kid, right? Mm-hmm. Because you feel less than. It's almost, it has nothing to do with what you're living in. It just has to do with this psychological problem of where you perceive yourself in the hierarchy. And Peterson's talked about this with the serotonin system, right? Like we have a part in the, in the top of our spine, the base of our skull, that it measures our rank in the hierarchy. And if it puts us at low rank, it punishes us with depression. It punishes us with, if you lose again, it's going to be terrible. So we become hypersensitive to losing. Right. So I feel like it's related to that system. And then once you had too many losses in your life, for whatever reason, you start to get that feeling of less than. And when you're less than, you want to tear it down. You want to tear the whole structure of hierarchy down and flatten it right to where you are. It's just total selfishness. Right. So I thought about why is that? And I thought, you know, in order for a human being to make decisions, they need the ability to do comparative value. Like they need to be able to compare things of value, right? They need to be able to rank things. That's ordinal ranking, right? That's like you read Man, Economy, and State when Rothbard goes through that. He's, it's not cardinal rank, it's ordinal. Things are, we rank them in order. And then I think what happens is that ranking system where we rank everything, why will you live in a house and not live in a cave? Because you've ranked that living in a house is superior to living in a cave for whatever reasons that your unconscious mind comes up with. You're not as wet, you're not as cold, blah, blah, blah. But why do we eat that food versus that? Why do we pick an attractive person versus an ugly person? It's because we're constantly like the mind has to be ranking all the time, all our decisions, all our options. And then I think what happens when that turns against you and then you rank yourself and then you're low and your mind's like, fuck. And it's very resentful and very angry. Can you hold on a sec? Just hold on one second.
Yeah. So with the ranking, there's something I want to pull up. So I think that natural process, I think is actually is a positive. So if you think, about how men with honor, for example, behave, if they perceive their rank to be lower, what they need to do, then it's a signal for them to get stronger, to get better
and to rise.
Exactly. Yes. Whereas resentment to me feels and sounds very submasculine, i.e. very feminine, like, or dark feminine. Is that, you know, I like, cause I think light feminine, for example, would be looking to, maybe all feminine is like, this is like, you know, they want to kind of catfight each other, into equality. Right. Whereas like, you know, a man would want to raise himself up when he perceives his rank lowering. Yeah. And
well, they just have a different, totally different biology. So where I was going with that is this ancient bone to pick is that women just, you can call it just based on physicality differences or the basic roles we've had, they have a bone to pick that they feel less than to men. They just do. They just, is it because we're more like naturally athletic? Is it because we got more free time? Like if you look at, you know, ancient hunting cultures, hunter gatherers, you know, the guys would go out and hunt and then they would basically relax the entire time at the camp when they, or the tribe, wherever it was for the season. And they'd just be doted on and taken care of by the women who are hunting or who are gathering, who are doing all the work around there and just, like I said, doting on them. And often because of the males, they're called the privilege of being the high risk producer, they often had multiple wives. So these are all conditions that are there for an ancient resentment of, you know, because their role in history has been serving men. I mean, men have done the same thing, but this is always the idea you hear. It's like, well, you get to enjoy your work. You get to enjoy going to work every day. I have to be with the kids. I don't like this. Right. There's something women see about their own role that they don't enjoy their sacrifice, where men love it. We get to go hunt. Yeah, we'll feed the tribe, but man, we get to take down woolly mammoth. Like there's something about, but then women, and I guess maybe it's just because the feminine frames take over. Now it's like, oh, we get to raise kids to serve the family. I don't like that. I'm not enjoying that. I want to go on Instagram. I want to go to the bar or whatever. Right. So it's really screwed up that they take almost no pride in their natural role. And they're just jealous. And that's where I think that less than comes from. And it's just there. It's just there all the time. And it's easy for that to come out when the conditions are right.
See, maybe in an evolutionary sense, it comes out in the presence of a weak man or a weak frame. So I would say
in presence of like fiat conditions.
Well, fiat conditions for sure. Right. But like, let's have a look at the French Revolution once again. So Louis XVI was an intelligent king, but he was a fucking pussy. He was a complete pussy. Marie Antoinette had bigger balls than he did, for example. And he didn't have the frame, the position to put everyone back in the place. If he was like Louis the fucking 14th, the French Revolution would never have happened. Never, ever, 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 ever. It would have been fucking stemmed from the beginning. But he was a pussy and he actually allowed for that resentment to come out, because what people saw, and this is where I, like, over time I've become more of a monarchist, and more and more, the more I listen to this stuff, the more I feel like we, over thousands of years, kind of created this class system where we had a warrior class. You know, we had the knights, we had the peasant class, we had the farmer class, we had all these sort of different classes, and people didn't necessarily have a problem with the king or the nobles or the warriors. Like, they did their part and they performed, and, you know, the nobles acted, you know, their primary driving motivations were things like honor, for example.
Yeah. Contrary to what Hollywood says, they were very honorable people for the most part.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
And like, they were a key piece of order and prosperity of the times.
Totally. And what we did was, you know, with, for example, again, stemming back in the French Revolution, with the killing of the king, who was a weak king, this not only did a power vacuum sort of emerge, but the, you know, all of this resentment came out with respect to leadership. There wasn't strong leadership in civilization, and all the things like honor and respect and everything went out the fucking window. It's all gone now. And we, like, all of this resentment fucking came up.
And it's like, oh yeah, we've got our opening. Let's fucking take them out. Let's get even, right? We saw the same thing with COVID. So I think probably the same similar conditions. There's a collectively weak masculine frame, right? It's it's not capable of making any decisions that are remotely related to the future. Like, I mean, I would just call that moral decisions, right? It's like Peterson says, can you think about what's best for you today, your family today, your community today, and then tomorrow, and then the next day? That's like the nature of a moral decision. And no one could, there was no frame, there was no male frame in charge, no morality in charge during COVID to make that decision. So we were like, well, let's just go with instincts. This group's being harmed. This group's being vulnerable. Let's just nurture like crazy. It was just the heavy, heavy oppression of what it looks like when the tyrannical feminine frame of nurturing takes over. And so you can see how that happens. We just have collectively no male frame. So it's easy to just for those instincts to completely take over and then get even, right?
Getting even is actually interesting. It's even in the word, right? Getting even. It's like it's an equalizing force.
Right. And that's every time, you know, you got yelled at for not wearing your mask. That was some guy who's been pissed off at a guy like Svetsky his whole life in his fucking tan. And here he is not wearing a mask. And I have moral authority now and I'm going to call him out. It was just it was like it was heyday for them. They just loved it. It was finally here, right?
The bitter fucking peasants, basically.
But it's that less than process. If that's been turned against you in your life, you know, whether it was the quarterback of the football team got the girl you liked or something, and you felt less than, and the things you thought were going to be worthwhile to the world, no one really cared about. So you feel less than. And finally, when something like this happens, and you get to call out that guy, right? You get to say, yeah, you were actually always a problem. See, the way you behave is actually wrong. It's just like, it's the best thing that psychologically they can imagine, right? It reestablishes themselves and their rank. They've, you know, you probably had like a big bump in serotonin for people who've like typically were struggling and low status during COVID. They probably had a nice bump. They felt good about themselves.
So how do we deal with that? Like, you know,
well, you have to see, this is the weird part. You have to say, well, how is the world designed? Because you can say, well, that guy who's less than, doesn't he deserve to feel better? Doesn't he deserve to? I didn't fucking make this world. I didn't design it. I didn't design it where when you see fucking lions lose their territory to a competing lion and get killed, And then they kill all their other baby lions. And then immediately all the females go into estrus and they reimpregnate them all. I didn't design this world. This world exists on a brutal logic, right? Mm-hmm. And that logic, especially when it comes to humans, is about the dominance hierarchy. It's about excellence rises to the top. And we all benefit from it. We know this from economics. We know the nature of capitalism. People are fucking pissed off about the design of the world, right? And how it works. And some are winners and some are losers. I didn't fucking make this world. But if you don't play it by the rules in which it's designed, you have all sorts of fucking weird outcomes and the degeneration of us as a species. So mm-hmm. I don't try to violate the laws of gravity. I just know and accept that they are the nature of the world I live in. And I accept that also with the male dominance hierarchy, the nature of patriarchy, the nature of the masculine corralling the feminine. Like, do you know? So what do we do about it? It'll be people like us that are of the proper design, because that is the history of everything. Mm-hmm. Like when I talk about the other videos, tournament males, hypergamy, fucking the burden of performance of men, the nature of honor. This is the design of things. This has always been this way. It's mm-hmm. only in the last 20 years, this weird new way of living. And you think, well, it's more just, but it hasn't existed. It's not Lindy. It's mm-hmm. not the nature of our design. So if you want to bank on that, is that's what we're designed for, you're dead wrong. Like, you're utterly wrong. You have to bank on evolution. You have to bank on, you know, the design of the world. And I bank on that. So what do? I push hard in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It works. Every time you show a man this, show another guy this, every time you establish it in your life, everything gets orderly. Everything gets better.
Totally. Yeah.
It just fucking works because it's the way things are designed. Right? It's like when you take away, you put a human in a space shuttle and you take away gravity, what happens to their body? It starts fucking falling apart. That's mm-hmm. what happens when you take away things like the masculine frame corralling the feminine frame. Like, these aren't just philosophical concepts. They're as real as gravity. They're like mm-hmm. the nature of it. And if mm-hmm. you don't, mm-hmm. if you don't play it that way, if you don't, then you'll get a nightmare. Your life will be a nightmare. Hell on earth.
Yeah. So in many ways, these Gehenna. Positions, these positions are not a statement on, you know, how things ought to be. It's like how things are, and we're defining them, and we're coming to terms with this reality.
Yeah.
And this, I guess, ties back into the original reason why we started, you know, doing these podcasts, which was this idea of the meta, right? It's like, this is the fucking meta.
It is.
This is it. You know, we're not just talking about it because we want to feel good about ourselves. Like, we are discovering how one must behave and show up in order to maximize the quality of their existence.
Yes. And that moral concept of, you know, for yourself today, for your family today, your community today, and tomorrow, and the next day, and like, it isn't just about, oh, I just want to be this type of guy and, like, you know, be egotistical and blah, blah, blah. Like, no, I actually want my bloodline and my kids to thrive. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to suffer. Like, you look at kids these days and they can't get on an elevator without anxiety. Do you think mm-hmm. that's the design? You think that's what we're supposed to be like? You think that's the type of kids that are going to do well in the world? I don't want that. So I'm trying to unravel why that's happening and why they're terrified of everything, why they do nothing but sit on their phones, why they, you know, birth rates in the Western worlds are horrific. You know, like, this stuff is important to me, right? And I know that by figuring this out, you fix all that. And we see that. We see where these things are implemented. We see, like, the Amish, for instance, who've been able to create stability of everything we're talking about, right? And one of the big ways is that they limit exposure technology, but they restore everything. They're all, like, mind-bogglingly happy. There's no conflict. There's no violence. They're rich, and they have a massive birth rate. They're, mm-hmm. like, pumping out kids like crazy, and everybody's happy. Like, they're on to something. They're living in their version of the meta, right? Mm-hmm. I think you can do a version of that with modern technology,
mm-hmm.
but they're at least tapping into the ancient meta. They're tapping into the ancient way that you're supposed to live, at least organize yourself as a society, right? More tribal, like, with rules, mm-hmm. right?
What's I haven't studied the Amish much, but just as an anecdote, what's the masculine feminine sort of interplay in that society? Well,
it's just patriarchal.
It's patriarchal.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, it goes back to even, you know, like very old Christian concepts where, you know, Paul talks about this in the Bible, like women should dress a certain way and men should dress a certain way. So they have a lot of that stuff. Cause it's important, because if you dress, if you think about what's the problem with women these days, is they have competitive anxiety, right? If you understand red pill stuff, right? Because of hypergamy, they have competitive anxiety. And then that means that if you're on Instagram and you see a girl dressed one way and you're like, oh my gosh, she looks so much better than me, I've got to now go buy this. So when it comes down to dress and how you look and hairstyles, Botox, you create this spiraling out of control game theory of competing with each other. Right. Mm-hmm. And then before you know it, I did a post on this, like, oh, women are cat face and they look terrible. Right. And they're just, they've taken competition too. So what's a way that we can do that? Well, the Bible thought, well, one way that we can eliminate the competition between women is to make them look uniform in how they dress. That will remove this crazy competition. The Islam took it farther and it's like, okay, we're covering you completely. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know exactly how these things came about. I don't even know if women did it to each other, to be honest, because competitive anxiety does stuff like that. It's a crab bucketing effect, right? He's trying to never letting another woman rise. So, but anyways, the point is that these things create more stability, and stability can be defined by a higher birth rate. Like if you do not have a higher birth rate, that is the ultimate Darwinian truth. That is the ultimate, what you're doing is correct. If you look in the animal kingdom, that is the ultimate metric of what you're doing. Elon talks about it all the time now. Birth rate's everything. We have a horrific birth rate. We're living wrong. Islam has a great birth rate. Mormons have a great birth rate. Mm-hmm. Amish have a great birth rate, right? It's the feminist West that has a horrific birth rate. And I see that as a moral problem. And if my kids get caught up in that and I don't have any kids and my bloodline dies, well, you know, the entire evolutionary imperative of passing on your genetic code just died with you because you got caught up in some silly ideas, right? So that's what I'm against. And I understand that. Yeah. So sorry. That means, you know, we live in this world with winners and losers. I can't do anything about it. That's the nature of capitalism. That's the nature of all this stuff. Right. But I think people can get a better mentality about it, a better philosophy about it, and start taking that honorable approach. Like, okay, I want to rise myself. I want to, like the old, it's just the old way America used to be prior to 1913, prior to 1971, you know, just pull yourself up by the bootstraps and you can be anything. Like that's the way I see it. And that's what I think people should be doing instead of trying to rip everyone down.
Instead of trying to incessantly get even, it should be
the crab
getting
bucket,
better.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The entire world has basically become a crab bucket. And that actually, to tie this conversation off, like the last point I had here was ego death. Like even in the very word of ego death and these kind of esoteric, almost leftist spiritual fucking ideas is like, the crab bucket is an example of an attempt to destroy egos. Like ego is the thing that is trying to climb and establish itself. Right. And you know, this fucking, like I was at a Whole Foods the other day and I took a photo. Hold on. Let me find it because it was, it just screamed Western civilization to me. Yeah, here it is. It was, a. I don't know if you can see that, but
it was like up a bit.
It was a magazine with a fucking Buddha on the front. And anyway, basically,
and it said, what does it say there? I can't read it. It's backwards.
No self, no suffering. Right.
Oh, God.
Buddhism. Why Buddhism is the ultimate self-help. And I was just like, fucking, there's everything wrong with Western civilization, right? It's like no self. It's like, no. Self is absolutely fucking critical. Like no self. What do you mean no self? Like, and also suffering is absolutely critical. Like to suffer means to like climb through and challenge and contend with existence. Like you can't just fucking abolish suffering. If you want to abolish suffering, fucking wipe everyone out, get rid of existence, get rid of life. And there we go. No suffering, no self.
And I know what they're trying to say. They're saying it's not all suffering. They're talking about they're no suffering of your place in the hierarchy, which up until this point, you have no idea how to overcome. You've been stuck in it since high school. It's never getting better. here, either take go the drugs path, you know, go on antidepressants, or hey, go Buddhism and just lose yourself entirely. There is no hierarchy. Do you see what I mean? Like, this is this fundamental. I would rather go, hey guy or woman, here's how you rise in the hierarchy properly. You were passed down no knowledge on this. This used to be things that humans knew how to understand. That's why you would see the most blue collar poor worker back in 1890 wearing a suit going to work, right? Because they understood dignity. They understood this. They didn't know the serotonin system, but they understood that didn't matter what they had on the outside. They were going to have dignity. They were going to see themselves as highly ranked in the hierarchy, regardless of how someone might treat them. And that had a lot to do with the Christian concept of the Imago Dei, right? That all people have the image of God. So it's not that you, like the answer, the idea that you can overcome that system and no self, and I'm going to completely like remove it from my brain. The right answer is to do something more like the Christians have, or they did, like that guy, you know, I'm going to always act with dignity. I'm part of a greater thing. You know, I'm descended from God, right? I'm built in the image of God. That's how you do it. And people are learning that as they start to go back to church, but church is so feminized these days. They don't even touch on this, right?
Fuck, it's such a disaster now, yeah.
It used to be all about the image of God and the dominion mandate. Like we have this privilege of being children of God, and we should always have dignity. That's all kind of gone now for guilting and shaming, right? So anyways, that's a big rabbit hole, that one. So
it really is. I it's funny because in my mid-20s, and this was probably the most feminized phase of my life, guess what I was into? I was into Eastern mysticism and Buddhism and all that sort of stuff. And this is the reason I can talk about this stuff these days, is because like I was there. I was one of those. I was such a fucking pussy. You know, like I would turn women off just by my presence, because I was so fucking needy and focused on pleasing and, you know, you're a goddess, you're a fucking all this sort of shit.
Yeah,
fucking pathetic, right? Exactly. Absolutely, yeah. Fucking pathetic. And that's why, like, you know, when I hear things like, you know, a universe worshipping soul, it's like, to me, it's like, fucking bro, like, have some dignity. No. Like, no. You know, like the, yeah, it's strange. And the thing is, like, there is something to be said about, you know, maybe not Buddhist thinking, but at least some of the Taoist thinking, right? Which was influenced, you know, partially by Buddhism, but, you know, Taoist thinking, there's a place for like non-attachment, for example, to material
things. I was just going to say that there's a problem of attachment. Absolutely. Right. Go ahead. That's the main thing is the problem of attachment.
Yeah. And attachment stems from a desperation and a lack of belief in self, right? Or a lack of well-formed ego. So, you know,
right.
If you're attached, you're drawing your validation from external things, and then you can't let go of those external things because they make up your ego. You haven't constructed your ego from within. This is where I strongly disagree after, you know, having been well versed in that world, is that it's the problem is not to dissolve the ego. The problem is to actually forge a ego that stands on its own. You know, it's not to throw the fucking baby out with the bathwater. Like you don't, and this is where I think a lot of Eastern thinking has completely fucking gone off the rails. And, you know, people, you know, who think they're fucking ultra spiritual, they go down that path and they become completely fucking feminized, like absolutely fucking out of their mind feminized. And it's sad to see. You know, in fact, I would even argue, you know, there comes a point where a little bit too much philosophy ends up sending you down that path, and you start to like question everything.
That's where I'm at, right? And I even kind of back off from Twitter these days a lot about it, because I just don't care about that level of depth of analysis anymore. The stuff is simpler, you know, and I've tried to make that clear in how I talk about frame. Like you have simple frame conflicts. Like you, like a guy could be, like you were just talking about, you know, what was the universe thing you say?
The universe worshipping soul.
Right. I feel like that's just a real problem of frame conflict in the home, that this is the stuff we as men come up with when we don't know how to deal with the feminine frame in our lives, whether it's a mother, whether it's a wife, whether it's even daughters, right? Like, we just can't handle it. It's sort of an overwhelming weapon that gets used, that we just feel guilty and ashamed. We don't know who we are. We're so confused by our male instincts. And I think once you learn that, none of this shit's important, because in the absence of that, it's fucking very easy to be happy as a man.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very easy. Like, it's the easiest thing on the planet. Think when you're in your 20s, how happy you are hanging out with your buddies, doing fuck all. You're totally happy. Then you get into a relationship and now there's all this fucking control on you. And you're like, I don't know what I'm into. I'm playing a game. I don't know the rules. I don't know how to act. I don't know how to win. I don't know how to do anything. So then maybe you fight back in the start, but then you just fucking give up and go inward so deeply that you're just not even recognizable. When you just need to go back to the dude in his 20s who was hanging out with his buddies. And when he's getting guilted for doing that, he goes, fuck you, I'm going to hang out with my buddies. You know what I mean? Like it needs to, you just need to get back to that male camaraderie. That's it's such a simple problem to solve. Like, you can get so deep with how fucking far you can go with thinking about this shit, but it's simple. And that's why our ancestors never went to this depth.
Yeah.
You never see them go to this level of depth. They didn't need to. Like this is so modern, right?
Yeah. It's fucking French. It's the deconstructionists deconstructing everything to fucking bricks.
But it's right.
Like, it reminds me of the dichotomy of, simple and difficult versus complex and easy, right? And yes, we sort of, you know, modernity confuses us with this shit. It's like it tries to give you these like really complex answers and, you know, this complex glossing over of everything and kind of like deliver you a really simple, an easy pill, but under this, like, it's all complicated. So you don't understand it, but here, take the fucking pill. Versus, you know, ancient bro science is
right.
Lift weights, stand in the sun, and you'll be good, bro. And that's it. It's fucking simple. Now, it's not easy because you got to go and actually lift the damn fucking weight, and you got to go, you know, spend some time in the sunshine. So it's not easy. It takes like fucking energy. It's not just a pill that you can pop, but it's simple. So simple and difficult versus complex and, you know, perceivably easy.
Yeah, this to me goes all the way back to the Garden of Eden and the problem of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's just our nature to play as gods, right? We have such a hard time with just accepting the design of the game we're in, right? That we have to fucking deconstructionists. Mm-hmm. We have to just recraft everything. And now, you know, that's an ego that can die, right? That version of that ego, right? But they don't think of it as ego. They think of it as like compassion and, you know, like, anyways, I can get lost in that stuff. But
well, this is what I would call the ancient problem. Yeah, that's what I would call a untamed ego, right? So there's elements of the ego that need to be tamed. And this is why I come back to this concept that, and I'm writing a piece on this called Ego is Not the Enemy, as a fuck you to that moron Ryan Holiday. You know, he wrote that ego is the enemy. But it's the key thing is that a man, particularly, and I think ego lives in the frame in the realm of the masculine, is that a man must forge the ego. Now, there's parts of you that are, you know, as you kind of outlined in the beginning, is like untamed instinct,
violence. It can be all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
And, you know, the ego is made up of all of these things. Now, if you don't forge your ego, or if you are a slave, like if your ego, for example, is a slave to your attachments and it's a slave to your environment, and you as a subset are a slave to your ego, you're basically no better than a fucking animal. And then, you know, maybe that ego needs, even that ego doesn't need to die. What has to happen is that ego needs to fucking forge itself through and chop the things off that don't benefit it.
There was, because I did a post on this or a tweet on this, and it was Dr. Taylor Burrows who replied. I don't know if you know her, but she said, it's not the ego that's the problem. It's the ego defensiveness that's the problem. I was like, yes. And that's attachment.
Mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's coming from that scarcity mentality. That's coming from all that stuff we just talked about, right? That's the problem.
Yeah, it's coming from a fragile...
You need a big ego and a big shit-eating grin when shit goes bad. That's what you need. You get what I mean? Like, that's the attitude. Then that's a great ego. That's a fun ego, right?
And it's an ego that you own as opposed to being owned by. And
exactly.
And that's, once again, it's a simple distinction. But, you know, and I think this takes work. The more I think about this whole ego thing, the more I think it's like absolutely fundamental for a man to spend his life forging the ultimate ego.
Well, you know what the problem is that we're using an old Freudian word that's actually outdated, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, we're trying to encapsulate, you know, they didn't even have like a good understanding of the unconscious mind back then. So we're trying to encapsulate all these sort of instincts and stuff into this one word, and it doesn't really fit, right? And I've tried to figure out like what is a better word, you know, and it's hard to find. But I think that's the problem. We're trying to, and as some people can use this word in the you know, the incorrect way because it's so broad now, you know. So I think that's largely the problem.
It's a semantic issue. Yeah,
I like to think of it as fire. Like, I like to think of it as fire, and fire is ambition and tenacity. And I feel like that's what you want to cultivate, and you want to be ambition, tenacity, and you don't want to ask permission.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That to me is like, that's what you want. Is that ego? That would look like ego when you, if you did that and you acted that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where I'm at.
Once again, I think there's a, that to me is a very, very healthy ego, and not just healthy, but absolutely fucking necessary. Like to me, when I think of this word, once again, I think we need to claim back that fucking word, honestly. Like, fuck these feminists and fuck these faggots and all these fucking pussies. Like, we need to claim back that word. There's nothing wrong with the ego. Fuck Ryan Holiday, for the record.
You might be right. I tend to fucking, as soon as these clowns get in, like, take over the battlefield like that, I just, What words have they taken? They've taken capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken, there's so many words you see.
They've taken hierarchy. They've taken all of these fucking things. Like, everything's fucking bad now. All the things that ordered the world and put it in a, you know, in a frame, like patriarchy.
Well, that's what they do. That's their chaotic nature, is to take these words and actually destroy them for, you know, proper use. So we're constantly giving us constraints on how we can communicate. But yeah. If you want to take it back, be my guest.
Okay, I'm doing it. Fuck him.
Yeah.
Anyway, last quick thing I want to ask you, and we can wrap this baby up, is maybe we go deeper on this in a future episode, but kind of dignity. I know you've spoken about this in the past, and to me, this aligns with the concept of ego once again, but I think this is not spoken about enough. And it was one of the topics that I wanted to discuss from the beginning, but we've kind of gone off on 10 other tangents. So maybe we can tie off with this definition, or maybe an explanation of why dignity is so important and what role it plays. And then we can close this off.
So this is the big one. I rarely talk about this, but I feel like this is the number one problem in society. This is the thing that, you know, when you read about the communist revolutions, you read about all this stuff. Like, why are these things happening? It is related to this problem. So I planned to do a thread on this ages ago, and I started writing it, but I never got down. I'm like, this is just way too fucking hard to write about. So I'll explain it here. Going back to the meta stuff, right? That we were in this environment 50,000, 60, 70, 250,000 years ago, where we lived a certain way, and that we incubated in that environment so long that it's who we are, right? We haven't been long enough in this new environment, although we have experienced some things which we'll talk about in a minute that have accelerated that process. But that environment, not only, like, you talk to a carnivore, you talk to a keto adherent, or you talk to a paleo person, they understand that we are adapted for a certain type of food, right? And they look at, you know, the upper paleolithic, and they say, this is the food we're adapted for. And this is why fatty meat is, because we're hunting megafauna, right? And everyone understands that. Makes perfect sense. We're adapted for that food, right? We go all the way back to Homo erectus. We ate bone marrow, and we were able to crack the bones. And so we're really adapted for bone broth and all, you know, like, everyone understands that. But what they gloss over is that we're adapted for a certain type of hierarchy, So when you look at the tribal conditions of those times and you think about the hierarchical nature of that tribe, it was very flat. It's not incredibly hierarchical like we have now. And the main reason that people think, no, there must have been like a main warrior who was in charge or a major elder. It wasn't like that because they were all group hunters. There wasn't, you know, some guy on horseback who's like awesome with the bow and he's like uniquely talented and he has outsized production and he's glorified in the tribe. It was group hunting, right? And then they'd come home and they'd bring all the food back to a bunch of women and elderly people gathering and taking care of the kids. And it just was very egalitarian, right? And I mean, it would have had a hierarchy like this, right? Maybe there was an elder who was really wise, who was maybe at the top, got the most admiration and had the highest status in the tribe. But for the most part, it was a flatter hierarchy. So we are adapted for a flat hierarchy. And then whenever technology enters, so I give this example in one of my tweet threads, it's one of the most important observations in history to understand a lot of things that goes on with humans is that when, what band was it? I can't remember. I don't think it was the Sioux, but it was an Indian band was observed when they first got the adoption of the horse, right? And as soon as they got the adoption of the horse, massive change in hierarchy occurred in the tribe. Certain hunters were capable of very large outsized production. And it led to the beginning of individual property because now an individual hunter on horseback is able to mark his kill and it's his. It's not like 12 spears taking out a woolly mammoth. This was his. He did all the work for that buffalo. That's entirely his. That's his arrows. So you guys don't get any. Do you get what I mean? So it started this major adaptation towards the psychological feeling of individual possession, right? And because he could do that, and he could, because there's just a natural hierarchy will emerge whenever technology is implemented. Certain people will be better than others. Certain male warriors, there was the 1% who could just kill way more buffalo on horseback. And then they were rewarded with the ability to take on more wives. So then you start to see polygamy arise, right? Because they have all this production. They're essentially like a wealthy guy and they can afford having all these women dote on them, right? And take care of it all. Like you clean the hides and you dress the animal, blah, blah, blah. And you feed the tribe and you feed all my 17 kids or whatever, right? So that began when you implemented the horse and then polygamy happens and all this individual possession happens, you're taking the hierarchy from like a flat to this, right? It starts getting very narrow and high and so very select people are at the top of it. And then you see the problem of less than of the people at the bottom of the hierarchy, right? And that's just the first example. That would have been on steroids with the agricultural revolution. That would have been on steroids with when the first men were able to domesticate animals and make way more production than their starving hunter-gatherer counterparts who there's no megafauna left, right? So this process that happened in history causing the extreme narrowing of hierarchy, we are not adapted for that. We are not adapted for mentally handling this narrow hierarchy. So it's one of the reasons why religion comes because it helps us with this problem. And not only does a narrow hierarchy happen, but the tribe disintegrates and it spreads all over the land and people are disconnected and alone and isolated. And all this shit happens when this change happens, like I described with the horse. And religion starts bringing everyone together. And one of the big things they do, particularly the Christian religion, and I suspect it's the Jewish religion also, is that through the concept of like things like the Imago Dei, they start lowering the hierarchy of at least the synagogue where you're at or the church that you're at, that no, we're actually not like this. And we want you to act as though this, that the poor matter, widows and orphans matter, right? We want to have a far more of a heart for people that are at the lower end. And those at the lower end, we want to encourage you that you are children of God. You are not failures. You are not the losers of the game of evolution. You should operate with dignity and you should feel proud of yourself and that you're capable of great things. And solve the problem up until 40 years ago. And that's the foundation of dignity. The dignity is the is the solution to that less than problem. It's that instead, no, I have dignity. It doesn't matter where I am on the hierarchy, I have dignity. No one teaches that anymore. No one pushes that anymore. If you meet someone from the Great Depression or World War II, that's how they talk. That's how they think. That's how it was, that you always had dignity, always operate with dignity, and that's gone now. Those generations are gone. So we will go back to that, because that's going to be one of the most Lindy ideas in history. And it's the thing that I really push with, you know, the guys I help, is that dignity is everything. And it's the only way that you can hack that serotonin system to not punish you with low serotonin, given your rank in society. Because you are, and it requires the rest. So the rest of the people in the church to believe that you have value, right? Because it's like a, not only do you feel you have dignity, but because they believe you have dignity also, even if you're low rank, you're still treated with great respect. And that's what fixes it all. So that's a long explanation of dignity. So it's repairing the broken hierarchy that we're not adapted to.
Mm-hmm. And at the risk of going down this rabbit hole, just really quickly.
It's big. Can't finish on this idea. It's just too big.
Yeah. Is this a patch for?
Yes.
Okay. Now, so at what point does one become adapted to a hierarchy, you know, a steep hierarchy?
Well, that would have to be a natural selection process. So we're in a steep hierarchy now because dignity's gone and there's lots of technology. So for instance, that's where you see like all the men are, like very select few of men are getting all the women right now. We're in a tournament male environment. Mm-hmm. We're in a highly, highly hierarchical environment. We have incels, we have MG Tau men, like men are losing everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. Women are losing everywhere too. So it would take thousands and thousands and thousands of years of this to exist as it is, and all the bottom people to die every generation for this to become adapted to it, I think. Like I don't know if I can explain it any easier than that, but the ones who feel less than, who are at the bottom of the hierarchy, who aren't adapted to, it's no different than you've seen the movie Idiocracy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like in the future and they're eating, they don't have water anymore. They have like Gatorade. It's like the shittiest food. Now imagine the world changed like that and it was super low quality food. Well, you would eventually adapt to that. Like if it was just seed oils and garbage, eventually humans will adapt to that. But all the ones who are not adapted for it would have to die. So that would mean like the people who react well to eating steak, who react well to eating high quality food, they all need to die. All the strong people need to die, essentially, to adapt. And then some guy's out there and he can actually handle seed oils okay. He can handle drinking Gatorade at every meal. Do you know what I mean? And he reproduces. So it would have to be that for hierarchy. I don't know what that looks like, but it would have to go on for 50,000 years or something like that. So it's probably not realistic that we will. It's more realistic that we'll just have a patch upgrade, that this thing will always be naturally unstable without the religious patch upgrade.
Mm. Yeah, there's
just like our instinct for human sacrifice, right? That is always present in this environment as well, which I talked about. What was that? The one before last, about the caring capacity environment. As soon as the caring capacity of the environment, these instincts come out for human sacrifice, right? Current version being abortion. All right.
Yeah. And maybe this is a function of me being far more tournament male-ish in my persona, but you know, I'm very, very, very pro steep hierarchy, and I think you know the more. In fact, my biggest bone to pick with religion and Christianity is the attempt to flatten hierarchy. I think that's a. I can understand how it develops some stability, but I wonder. You know, the cost of that.
I get what you're saying. So here's where I would challenge that. So just imagine something changed technologically in the world where me, you, and, you know, 30 other guys and our wives and kids ended up at some island somewhere. and we're living, and there's these big animals that we have to hunt as a group. You'd fucking love it. Like, I would love it. Like, it would be so fun. We'd spend every day out in the sun hunting these things. We'd go back to our loving wives. We wouldn't care about hierarchy at that point. Like, we would have so much fun. We would enjoy the shit out of that, right? Because that would be the most ancestral version and conditions of what we're adapted for. So, I'm guessing you would enjoy that. I could just imagine that type of like recreating true 50,000 BC woolly mammoth camp conditions of a tribe.
Mm.
Like I'm fine actually not being the superstar hunter. That would be so cool to just go with 12 guys every couple days and leave for a week and go hunt woolly mammoths together. I would love that. I don't need to be hotshot. I don't need to be quarterback of the football team. I don't need to be Elon Musk. I don't need to be like, I would enjoy the shit out of that. And I think most men would. But I think when you get into this environment, we also become gnarled and we want to then push. We have to, you have to, because you're so at threat if you don't, your sovereignty, that if you don't become extremely high on the narrow hierarchy, that your future generations can suffer.
Mm. I mean, maybe it's a scale problem, right? Because like the woolly mammoth situation is something that works at small scale. But if we make the presupposition that we keep increasing population, for example, it's impossible for that kind of existence to you know.
I get what you're saying. Well, let me challenge you a different way, because so let's say you're really high on the hierarchy. Are you happy to bring others up? Assuming they're worthy, let's say they're not like degenerates and they're actually actively resentful and hate you. And I mean, they can just fuck off. But let's say people in your life, your family, extended family, if they were genuine people and you're on your meteoric rise, would you get pleasure out of seeing them also rise?
Yeah, generally. Yeah. You want to bring your tribe with you. Yeah.
So I that's where I would say you're not actually pro steep hierarchy, if that makes sense. You're not actually pro creating that distance between people. You're just pro really rising and bringing with you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong. Because that's the way I am, right?
Okay.
Like I want to do that, but it's not an insecure, because this is what people think like the supremacist instinct comes from. It's like, well, you just want to be on the top of the hierarchy and you want to create distance between those at the lower. You don't care about them. Where it's like, no, I'm actually that Christian archetype of it's from each according, like, you know, the communist saying is from each according to their ability, from each according to their ability to each according to their need. That doesn't bother me. That is actually the original structure of the church. So the superstar high hierarchy people would get all the admiration, adoration, and the freedom to do that. And then they would come back to the church and bring up everybody else with their generosity. That is how that's how it's designed. And that's how I feel about it. So it's, I don't know if I'm explaining it well, but I don't have the supremacist thinking that I want to be number one is they want others to be lower and lower and lower and lower. Lower, right? And even with, you know, how we talk about women, like I have no desire to see women fall down the hierarchy. I think that's what they're doing to themselves. I think they're absolutely destroying themselves. Their health is in shambles. They're in constant competitive anxiety with women. If you could go into the mind of a woman right now and see their serotonin system, you'd see that they're fucking miserable all the time. And that to me is not okay. You think you got like a house worth a lot of money, you think that's the hierarchy? It's the fucking hierarchy, right? And I want to see them rise properly, and I just don't think they instinctually do that on their own. So, but you see how this can be taken that way when it's like, oh, I'm pro narrow, I'm pro winners and losers. I'm not actually like that, at least with my community and the people I believe are deserving around me. I want to bring absolutely everybody with me.
Yeah. I want to, there's the piece about the women, 100% agree with you on. The ability to need, I can't agree with that, because I get what you mean. I understand the nuance there with respect to what you mean by someone who is, you know, a great leader. You know, the better the leader, the more he wants to raise others up. That 100% agree with, but I don't think that's I don't know if that's compatible with the communist ideology of from each according to their ability to each according to their need, because
only if it's voluntary. And I'll give an example.
Yeah,
you know, related to the, you know, when the horse was implemented, and this was you saw this arise with the Sioux, with Red Cloud and Crazy Horse, that they became renowned for their generosity. So the horse is creating this narrow hierarchy, and then they would share so much of their spoils, because these guys were like ridiculous. Their own horse, like their tribe of horses or horde of horses they had. They'd have 50 horses or something. Like, they'd be nuts. They'd be like covering acreages. Well, that's all Crazy Horse's horses. And that's all Red Cloud's horses from all their spoils of war. And they would give away all the time to the less fortunate families within the tribe. They would constantly be sharing their outsized kills, because they were like extraordinary hunters, and they would constantly be sharing with the tribe their spoils of war. So they were doing that voluntary. That just arose, and you read it and you're like, well, this is like Christian generosity almost. It like naturally arises when a tribe has that feeling of tribalism, right?
Mm-hmm.
And where it becomes ugly is when you're disconnected, you're being forced to share with people who are undeserving, who resent you and hate you, mm-hmm. right? That whole process. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have no interest in, I can just dust them on the hierarchy. Doesn't yeah. matter to me. Leave totally. Them in the dust.
I wonder if the capacity to save the excess product of one's labor is part of the adaptation process. So for example, I would argue maybe that Crazy Horse and all of these guys who had outsized wins in this narrow hierarchy ended up with a lot. And because they couldn't manage that much, and because, you know, the wealth, for example, because that was the measure of wealth, you know, the number of horses and the number of food and et cetera, would have just otherwise gone to waste. It made more sense to share it around. I wonder, in an age of Bitcoin where the excess product of one's labor can be stored in something indestructible like Bitcoin, whether that changes.
Yeah, whether they're actually generous because they actually don't have carrying capacity for it, is what you're saying.
Yeah. So, but see, once again, you know, to your point, like if I'm sitting here and I'm, you know, a guy and I've got 1,000 Bitcoin, I actually think I would be more inclined to, you know, maybe spend, maybe help out, you know, maybe do some of these things anyway, because I have more than enough for me, more than enough for my family, more than enough for my local community. So, and I guess, I mean, this is where fucking philanthropy comes from anyway. It's this, you know, even before Christianity, this existed. This existed with the original kings and queens and the.
Well, it's actually a tribal instinct. Fundamental tribal instinct. You feel this reciprocation with actual, you know, direct kin of yours and extended kin that makes up your tribe. I mean, that's there biologically.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes us happy, right? Like, we don't actually want to dust our family unless they've made us they've been resentful to us or something. We actually, like, it's fundamental. We're good that way. We're designed to be good that way to our tribe.
Mm.
The problem is we're disconnected and we have no tribe. So this energy gets warped.
Yeah. I think
other people want to possess our productivity. Like, it's a bit of a mess, right? There's a lot here.
Yeah.
Things like that really emphasize the good nature of what we are. Like, we have a very good nature, particularly when we're in proper tribal circumstances. The human being is a very beautiful thing. Like, when you read about how Crazy Horse and Red Cloud were to their tribe, it was beautiful. It was as Christian as it gets. It was as Jesus as it gets. It was incredible. But then you see how they are to competing tribes, and they are the most ruthless humans you've ever met in your life, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just happening on a micro scale everywhere now, right? Our tribes are not even by blood these days. It's just like a couple people you like. And even that's a loose tribe, right? And then everyone's at war with each other. Go ahead.
Did you ever read that Territory book, the Robert Ardrey's one?
I haven't read it yet, but I think about that concept all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's such a good concept. In there, he talks about one of the ways these sort of territorial outlines remain stable or in this sort of dynamic stability is through enmity and enmity. And that is through specific conflict with out-groups and specific dominance hierarchies within groups. And it's very, very interesting. It basically just reminded me of what you mentioned there about like the way you behave with your in people take care of them. And then the way you attack and behave with the out group. And that actually, what it does is it creates internal homogeneity and consistency and stability.
Yes.
And external heterogeneity. So there's like a real stark difference between you and this other group. And the thing is, people, you know, naively will turn around and say, well, that's bad because, you know, these people are non-accepting of these other people. But actually at a macro scale, it's very good because what it does is it creates a difference in culture. It actually creates fucking diversity.
Absolutely. You know,
for all the people yelling about diversity, that's what creates diversity. It's like my fucking tribe is different to yours. Like, fuck you.
And when you combine it with capitalism, it doesn't mean we need to go to war for territory anymore.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm,
and then it just means that you have really cool cultural difference all over the place, right? Instead of this crazy monoculture that we have now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that
was the fix, you know, you can see the chain of these, you know, patch upgrades. So the outgroup problem in the world pre-capitalism meant war a lot. It meant violence a lot, right? And that, you know, that's the best elucidation on that is the Good Samaritan story about Jesus trying to fix it, right? He's trying to fix the outgroup problem. He's saying the Good Samaritan is not an evil man. Look, he will stop for a Jew that Jews wouldn't even stop for, right? Because he's dying on the side of the road. And he, in a lot of ways, in the violent world, Christianity fixed that outgroup problem and became very accepting or opening to the Gentiles, right? But then capitalism came along and then obsoleted it to begin with. Like we don't really have this violent border disputes and territorial disputes anymore. We just trade, right? Mm-hmm. And they say when goods stop flowing, then bullets starts flying, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So in the world we have now, we don't need the excessive, massive acceptance of every other group and feeling the guilt of having your own tribe and culture. You don't need to worry about it anymore. You can just enjoy yourself and trade. And mm-hmm. warfare is now done through the competition of trade.
Totally. Totally, totally, totally. Yeah. That's such a poignant point because you see, you know, people trying to eliminate things like warfare and competition and aggression. Right. Like I remember watching this video a little while back with these fucking psychopaths from, I think it was like this leaked video from like some internal CIA discussion about creating a molecule that if they inject it into people with high aggression, it basically makes them devoid of aggression, right?
Oh, right, I've heard about this shit.
I was watching this, I was like, what the fuck? Like, this is like an example of this naivete and complete fucking mindlessness. Is like you remove aggression.
This like, is the playing God thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. What else do you fucking remove with that? Like,
right, it's like Stephen Hawking, considered mm-hmm. the smartest person on earth. He says what did he say? The number one problem of the world is male aggression, aggressiveness. I'm like, you're a fucking toolbox moron, to say that, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, you are not useful. I don't care about your physics shit. Mm-hmm. It must not, you know, the typical dumb guy producing a product and providing wealth for the community is infinitely smarter than that mm-hmm. guy. And that mm-hmm. guy doing it usually does it out of aggression because he's got this totally. Rage and this energy and he wants to make money and he wants to do stuff. So
Dude, anyways, 100%. Look, all right, we wanted to do an hour and we've done two, so fuck it. I'm going to split it into two episodes anyway.
That's how we do it, man.
Indeed. Any final things that you want to touch on here or a way to wrap it up?
No, that covers a lot. That was really good. I really enjoyed that. I feel like this is the major, what we're tapping on here is the major, I don't want to say major problem, but it's the major sentiment. Like it's the thing that men know is out of whack underneath the surface. And I feel like the stuff that we're talking about and other stuff that's going on right now, just even like guys like Jer writing his book, it went to sort of like these fringe ideas to now it's becoming almost like a, I don't want to say a movement because it's not the right idea, but it's sort of defiant men that are like for what I'm saying, like, I don't care. Like if someone's watched this and be like, oh, you said this, you said, I don't give a fuck, to be honest, because everything I'm saying is rooted in evolutionary biology for the most part. And that's as close as truth as we can get in the world. So, but I know that this stuff, when men adopt it, their lives instantly transform. I've never not seen a guy take on this stuff and not instantly transform. And there's one thing that you need to remember. So this is where everyone thinks this is a problem. Just because a man starts embracing his aggressive, angry, let's say, or his capacity for anger, that nature of rage, the nature of testosterone and adrenaline, right? Because we're adapted to that. We feel better when we have outlets for that. It doesn't mean you become harmful. It doesn't mean that you become violent, right? It just means that you assert yourself. So
yes,
that's the one thing I say to men that go on this path, is that move slowly at first and observe. And you can use your anger in terms of how you speak, right? But the universal thing that has been eliminated that you shouldn't do is that this isn't a call to be like, become like violent or become, that's how you deal with the feminine frame. It's these things are important, but again, men are supposed to be corrupt. Their standards, their instincts are supposed to be corralled into standards. And that's the big one, right? So embracing this is really good and you're going to feel a lot better, but you have to be refined about it. Mm-hmm. This isn't a call to become like a fucking savage.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's a maturity that needs to come with it. And it's not about being a fucking unhinged maniac. It's about.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because then you're just a
mature man. And then you're just a boy.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. So this is, and I call this concept, you know, the righteous moral authority. And that's what anger properly channeled looks like, the righteous moral authority. And if you ever see, great example of this, every time you watch Tom Cruise in a conflict, you ever seen him? It's just like, he is the righteous moral authority. He's angry. He's guilting and shaming them back. He accepts no assault on his frame. And he usually gets them to concede. And then he goes back to smiling and, you know, no violence, no nothing, but he's the righteous moral authority. And that is the pinnacle of what it looks like when male standards lead.
Yeah. He's definitely the, a great archetype in terms of a man with some fucking frame. He's a legend.
Yeah, totally.
Love the guy. All right, my man. Thank you so much. I'll put links in the show notes back to your work and everything you're doing. I appreciate you taking the time out as usual.
No problem, my man. And I appreciate it also. It's always great to chat with you.
Thank you for listening to the Wake Up Podcast. Find us on the Fountain app and send us a boost with a comment. I'll try and read them each week and send you a shout out. And remember to grab a copy of the Uncommunist Manifesto and join us in defeating plague that is consuming our world.